Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to FPC Radio Live. It's a brand new week. It's May the 9th. Happy Mother's Day, belated Mother's Day to everyone out there. Yesterday was obviously Mother's Day, and we weren't on the air that day. But to all the mothers out there that like to be listening, we wish you a heartfelt happy Mother's Day. But no, I'm excited to be back. It's been a long, long weekend. I personally got to go up to the frigid northeast of Maine, and John, I am glad I moved because I just don't care for the cold. I just don't.
I'm with you. I despise it. I still don't understand where my relatives came from Italy to here. The climate's not the same, but this is where the work was when they came over in the early 1900s. So here I am. Maybe I should move. But yeah, this has been a weird spring. I mean, it's May 9th, and it's still like 42 degrees at night at best, and maybe like 53 in the afternoon, and it's windy and it's raw. But at the end of the week, we're going to get some of your weather when it reaches like the high 70s. So we look forward to that.
Well, when I showed up to the hotel room in Bar Harbor, Maine, anyone familiar? Beautiful area. I love it up there. I mean, I do. But I showed up and I noticed very, very quickly that the foliage was absent. It just, trees were still bare. Like, it was the dead of winter. And I'm thinking, like, wait a minute. If I remember correctly, even in the worst winters, by this point, there's at least something. And there really wasn't. So outside of my Florida adapted body almost freezing to death up in the Northeast, it was actually a fun weekend. And I do look forward to hopefully getting back up at some point when it's actually warm and I can walk around in shorts and a t-shirt and not feel like I'm going to freeze to death, because that's what I was feeling like, especially when I first showed up and I was very ill-prepared for the colder weather. Let's just put it that way.
Well, you're like Devontae Adams. I mean, the reason he left Green Bay had nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. Green Bay offered him as much money, if not more, than the Vegas Raiders ended up signing him for. He just wanted to get the hell out of the cold. I don't blame him.
No, look, we talked about this before. Wisconsin, Green Bay, Sheboygan, or Las Vegas. I mean, come on.
Simple choice.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple choice. But yeah, it was a good weekend. But I was very much happy to walk off the plane and feel 70 degree weather at midnight. That was nice. I can't complain about that. So what I can complain about, though, John, and as a lot of people have been, and this is not a team specific issue, but a league wide issue. The officiating in the NBA has been some of the worst I think I've ever seen. And maybe, you know, you've watched basketball a lot longer than I have, but the inconsistencies and just sometimes mind boggling decisions made, and again, I'm not saying specifically for one team or the other, I'm saying league wide, has been, I don't know. It feels like this has been a very, very bad playoff season.
Well, I think it gets brought to light more because, first of all, every game's on national TV, which has been for quite a while, but you also have these incredible stoppages in plays. Is it a flagrant one? Is it a flagrant two? Are we going to eject the player? And it's just, it drags the game out. Basketball has a great flow to it, unlike baseball. You get an NBA game in 2.5 hours, it goes by quickly, it's entertaining. But when you have these stoppages that can take 3, 4, 5 minutes to find out if the ball went off of player A's finger or player B's leg, lap, or if we're going to decide if it's a flagrant one or a flagrant two, it just drags the process out. You know, when I started watching basketball, and I don't want to come across as Chris Mad Dog Russo here and start referring to the 80s and 70s, but there were only two officials on the court. Now there's three. So sometimes you put three people with whistles on the court, they've got to kind of prove their existence and get more involved. So that makes it more difficult. But also the fact, too, like yesterday, Phoenix is playing Dallas and Chris Paul fouls out, one of the all-time great players. And I still think half of his six fouls were very questionable. Why are you fouling that guy out? And it really changed the dynamic of the game. We saw that I know people are talking about the Celtics lost Saturday against Milwaukee when, I mean, Giannis gets away with a lot. He's the best player in the league. Generally, the superstars get all the calls. But the Celtics did outshoot Milwaukee from the free throw line 34-17. So Giannis had 12 of the 17 free throw attempts by Milwaukee. But the Celtics got to the line twice as much as Milwaukee. So when people push that narrative, I'm like, well, just look at the numbers. The Celtics did get to the free throw line a lot more.
I will say this, that not always, and again, I'm not saying specifically this, but I'll say just the sheer number of free throw attempts doesn't necessarily always indicate fairness, because a lot of people say, oh, well, look at the free throw attempts, and I'm not just saying specifically in this case, but we've seen in the past, like, makeup calls where teams were behind, and towards the end of the game, obviously, the numbers are going to look a lot worse, and look, the NBA, and it, through the fault of their own, has a credibility issue when it comes to their officials. Mm-hmm. I mean, how are you ever going to trust an NBA official ever again just because of, you know, things that have happened in the past? Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the conspiracy theories, like how, you know, Tim Donaghy texted Scott Foster more than his bookie during that time that, you know, he was betting heavily on games. And it's like,
that's
concerning. And, you know, this is a guy that is becoming kind of a character now. He's a character. It's Scott Foster. Everyone knows Scott Foster. It's like, oh, well, Chris Paul obviously knows Scott Foster very well. And you can, when teams, when everyone looking at a potential, oh no, here we go, it's Scott Foster's going to officiate. And it's like, you know, you go back to Tatum fouling out, you know, last series. And it's like, that was a very questionable, last foul call. I think you could certainly question some of his other decisions. And again, just the overall inconsistency by all officials. Now, do I think that there is a secret meeting underground where they all conspire to do this? No, I just think it's incompetence in a lot of cases. And, and in a lot of ways, ego. Like, you know, we see it in baseball. Mm-hmm. We saw the ump over there, you know, that issued an apology for, you know, they want to become part of the show. And I think NBA officials have a little bit of that in them. And again, I think the favoritism, and I think we've become too comfortable just accepting it. I do think that favoritism has gone a little bit overboard to the point where, like, how many times, like, you know, what was it that they told Ime was that, oh, well, you know, if you want the calls, they better fall down more. Well, Giannis is a big guy. Like, he's using his body in a very physical manner. Like, I mean, you could sit there by the letter of the law and call a charge. I mean, he'd foul out before halftime every game. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to call it by the letter of the law. So there's got to be a way to kind of rein that in a little bit. And I'm not saying call every single bit of contact. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, the superstar treatment in a way is really, really starting to overwhelm to the point where it's like, the Celtics, like, did not play their best game. Jason Tatum had, 10 points, and Giannis had 42. But they lost by 2 points, and you can point to the missed goaltend. And, you know, that decision not to give Marcus Smart, I mean, what's continuation in this league, John? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, to me, I'd have less of a problem with that if I didn't constantly see people get fouled and do, like, you know, do the one step, you know, little high arcing little touch shot and get that count. You know what I mean? We see that all the time where it's like, okay, that's like an additional step and basketball move. Whereas, like, Marcus Smart was literally jumping up to, you know, make the shot, and he got fouled, and somehow that didn't fall under the same category. Yeah. So
that's something the league worked on early in the year, because James Harden was the best at that, of, you know, flopping while shooting to get three free throws. So they kind of changed it earlier this year, and it happened in an earlier game for the Celtics against Dallas, when it looked like Marcus Smart got fouled, and then he didn't. But he did get fouled, but it wasn't a shooting foul. This time they were in the penalty, so he did get to go to the free throw line for two. He wasn't in a shooting position. He was going up to shoot, so it's almost like the tuck rule, like what's what. So, you know, that was a tough call there. The goaltending call was egregious. You also had, you know, there was, I think, one or maybe two times where Giannis clearly charged and they called a block on Grant Williams or Al Horford or Jason Tatum. And look, Hubie Brown is amazing. I mean, Hubie Brown's doing the game. He's 89 freaking years old. He's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's still one of the best, if not the best analysts out there. And he'll just say what, like most 89-year-olds will say what's on his mind. And he's, like, kind of, you know, looking at it and saying, well, what's a foul? What's not a foul? That looks like a charge to me. So that's important. But now it's up to the Celtics and Ime Udoka more than the players.
Mm-hmm.
Players, and this is my one gripe I have with Jason Tatum, he complains about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just literally isn't even on the court yet, and he's complaining. Let the coach handle this. Do it in a tactful way, and maybe you get some better calls tonight in a very, very important game four. So that's what they'll do. But, yeah, when you see Scott Foster show up, you'd be like, holy hell, what's going to happen? I know Chris Paul probably, when he sees Scott Foster show up, says, why do I even bother playing?
Exactly.
I don't have a chance, and this is an all-time great player.
And that's the thing. We sit there and laugh about it, but the reality of it, that's a problem. That is a huge problem. You should not, like, you know, the idea that you should not know the official's name, that should be the mantra of every officiating association in every one of these leagues. We don't want anyone to know who we are, and that's right. How it should be. They are part of the process of the game, but they shouldn't be known. It shouldn't be characters. It shouldn't be, you know, get this. Oh, here's this guy, or it's like Tim Peel, the NHL official who had issues, or, you know, all these other guys that had mediocre officiating careers but are now analysts, and it's like now they become characters, and it's like, well, no, now we're just, you know, based on the opinions we hear on TV, now we understand why you were a poor official. I mean,
yes,
going over to the NHL, it's like you have Bob O'Halloran or whatever his name is. And it's like, I'm thinking to myself, like, he's trying to explain. And it's just, he's just like a yes man. Like, yes, yes, no, I agree with, no, that was a bad call. Just say it. Just say it. You know, like, it's, you know, they're open to criticism because they're part of the process. And there's human element to it. Just like players, when they screw up, they get criticized and picked at. Officials should be as well. But the difference being, officials shouldn't be striving to be superstars and known names. You know what I mean? We're not making, they're not getting shoe deals. You know, they're not doing this. They're just officials. And unfortunately, I think we're creating this environment where, like, you know, officials have to have, you know, some notoriety. And then, again, the media gives it to them.
Yeah, like Cowboy Joe West, right? Who actually, I think, was a pretty good umpire. He's since retired, but, you know, he's writing country and western songs. He's writing a book. He's a character. They build a brand. I mean, I'm so old I can refer to Ron Luciano, who was like an over-the-top umpire in the 70s. But then it got to the point where it's like, you know, we're not here to watch you.
Yeah.
We're here to watch the players. Just kind of, as Bill Belichick would say, do your job. So, yeah, it does get a little bit infuriating. I mean, look, Joe Crawford, who, you know, just had some sort of running feud with Tim Duncan. Of all the people to tee up and throw out of a game, Tim Duncan, who never said a word. I mean, if it's Draymond Green or, you know, J.J. Redick when he was playing or someone like that, I could see it. But Tim Duncan was the most reserved superstar I think the league's ever seen, and somehow Joey Crawford found a way to tee him up and throw him out of a game. I'm like, you really must be looking for something. And now you got Scott Foster, who I'm still not sure how the hell this guy is still in the league after what you detailed, you know, going back and forth with Tim Donaghy. What's he doing out there? And he gets to referee, like, major games.
Yeah. Pivotal games.
Hide him somewhere. You know, don't put him on, you know, game five of the Eastern Conference Finals where he can really mess things up.
Yeah, and it's that's the thing. It's like, can the NBA ever fix the credibility issue? Probably not. I mean, you had to assume that when all this started to come out, and you know, it's almost more concerning that since then it's only been one guy. Like, to me, that's impossible. You know, this wasn't done. This wasn't just a rogue player. This wasn't a, you know, a player in the game, so to speak, you know, player in the betting game. This wasn't a rogue situation where it was just one guy that was out of, no. And again, you know, part of that logic I jump to is, well, I would assume that during all this time, you'd probably talk to your bookie the absolute most, more than your family, more than your mother, more than your father, all that stuff. But the fact that you had a fellow official as your most contacted, that is a huge red flag. So,
right.
To me, who knows? Who knows what the NBA is going to get themselves into? But the bottom line is, you know, conspiracies or not, it's just been inconsistent, poor officiating for the most part. It feels like this postseason, and it's unfortunate because, like you said, these games can have an incredible flow to them, and then through the decisions of the officials, they can change the whole landscape of the game, and it's unfortunate.
And it's something the league has to really kind of take hold of, because ratings are up 20% over the last 2 years. So the league is flourishing. In 3 years, the current TV contract expires, which was a 9-year, $2.6 billion TV contract. They're talking about, after this contract expires, that ESPN, TNT, whoever, I'm sure somehow Amazon will get involved as well, they could be looking at a 10-year, $7.5 billion, with a B, $7.5 billion contract, which would net every team around $250 million. The players, you're going to see players in the NBA 6-7 years from now, the stars making $100 million a year. It's going to be just like, you know, soccer with Ronaldo or Messi or whatever. And look, they're worth it because they're the product. So, you know, I think you got to kind of button this up before you get a little bit in over your skis and you get people watching games going, I just don't believe the outcome because some, you know, corrupt official or the league is involved and wants to make sure we get the game seven. You know, which is not something you want to have. You can't have that. In years past, there was an official I grew up watching, Earl Strom, who was one of the best officials. He was known as the road ref because he had like the personality. He had no problem making a big tough call against the home team and would have 15,000 people on him. He kind of cherished that. He was comfortable being the man in the black hat, but, this is something you got to watch. In all sports, there's concerns there. I mean, football, we think could be poorly officiated as well. And baseball, I don't think they get too involved with this, balls and strikes.
I'd say for football, it's more of a product of what the hell is the rules change so much to me, it's impossible to keep every official at the utmost, at the expert level understanding of the entire rule book, because it's constantly changing, and it's not like these rules are cut and dry. They're very open to interpretation, or at least the definition is very vague, that it creates these issues. So and to our knowledge, as far as we know, there hasn't been a scandal of sorts when it comes to NFL officials, you know, obviously fixing and betting on games. So there are different levels. I mean, I think officiating is hard in any sport, so I'm not trying to sit here and pretend like it's easy. But you can only excuse the difficulty of the task, or use the difficulty of the task for an excuse for so long. And when you when you're constantly talking about the officials, and the impact that they had on the game, and not in a good way, that's a problem. And I think the NBA, to your point, you know, you gotta make sure that this bubble isn't gonna burst when you're peaking, because if you have another scandal, another situation where maybe a ref was found that, you know, they were favoring a certain player or a certain team, or had some stock in wins and losses, that's a huge problem. Whatever momentum you're building, that's going to burst, because you're going to lose all the trust from all the fans, and it's going to become boxing. Look at what boxing is now.
Exactly. Boxing, wrestling, whatever it may be. And look, the scandal with Tim Donaghy was swept under the rug by then-Commissioner David Stern. May he rest in peace. But, you know, they had all the transparency of the Warren Commission. It was like, nothing to see here. We'll move on.
Well, and they were lucky that it happened then and not now, because, again, the access to information and the platforms available to anyone, again, whether you're right or wrong, it creates a much more intense situation.
Yeah, no, it's something they got to clean up, because the league is in a great place right now. There's so many brilliant young stars. Just look at these playoffs, Ian. There's eight teams left. I don't see any juggernaut among these eight. There's no team as good as Golden State when they had Durant, Curry, and Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. I don't think there's any team as good as Miami with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. I don't even think there's any team out there now as good as when LeBron was in Cleveland, because he was so damn good. You have eight teams. You can make a case any of these eight teams could win the title. Really, I mean, they're that even.
Well, like,
look at the wins and loss records.
Well, like you said, I mean, look at the Bucks-Celtics, and it's like Giannis had 42, and Jason Tatum, your best player, had 10, and the Celtics lost by 2 points. Like normally, if that's what it is, you're losing by double digits, and it's not a game.
Yep.
And again, this goes back to the couple calls that were made that directly impacted points and opportunities for points. So, I'm right there with you. I mean, you could sit there and would you say any one of these teams would surprise you if they ultimately went on to win? No, probably not.
No, I mean, at the beginning of this round, I said, okay, Philadelphia doesn't have Embiid. That would be a stretch. But now he's back, and that series is even. Dallas has Luka and then a bunch of role players, but now that series is even. And Memphis, which is a fascinating story, may not have John Morant tonight, and they're down 2-1. So they may be the first team that gets knocked out. But, look, I wouldn't bet against him not playing tonight because he's that tough a kid. And they've been right there with Golden State as well. And then, like we said, look at the Celtics-Milwaukee. That looks like certainly a 6 or 7-game series. Milwaukee may repeat as champions, but they're not a dynasty-type team as great as Giannis is, because they basically have Giannis, Drew Holiday, and we'll see what happens with Middleton if he ever comes back, and then a bunch of, you know, spot-up shooters, which is the best way to construct a team. But the league's in a great place right now. They don't want to screw it up because some crazy officials kind of go off on their own.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, we'll see. We'll see tonight, obviously, with the Celtics and the Bucks game tonight. Looking forward to watch some more hockey this week. The Bruins tied up their series yesterday. Yep. I got to see most of the game while waiting in the airport, so it was kind of cool. it'll be fun to watch tonight and kind of sit down and see what kind of Celtics team responds to a pretty tough loss. So, all right. Well, this was kind of a quick welcome back episode, but we will be back later in the week. We got to juggling our schedule a little bit, but we will be back. So keep an eye out for that. If you're just tuning in, be sure to download this podcast. You can check it out wherever you get your podcast from, preferably the full press coverage app. But if you don't, it is also available on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and all those fun places. So until then, have a great day, and we will talk to you later in the week.